Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for January 7th, 2014. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be speaking with Michaela Gack about a post-translational modification that affects the antiviral response. Ubiquitination is a post-translational modification that affects the stability, the activity, or the localization of target proteins. Ubiquitin is a small protein that can be attached to other proteins, usually on lysine residues, by enzymes called ubiquitin ligases. Where and how ubiquitin is attached to a substrate can have profoundly different effects on that substrate. Individual molecules of ubiquitin can be attached to target residues, or multiple ubiquitins can be attached in chains. Even the types of chemical bonds linking the ubiquitins to one another in a chain can vary. And proteins may be ubiquitinated at multiple sites, with different sites showing different types of ubiquitination and having different effects on the target protein. Ubiquitination is also reversible. Enzymes called deubiquitinases remove ubiquitins from substrates. And so the regulation of protein function by this post-translational modification is complex and dynamic. In a study published in this week's issue of Science Signaling, Michaela Gack's group reports on a ubiquitin-specific protease that promotes the response to viral infection. Gack joined me on the telephone from Harvard Medical School. Hi, Dr. Gack. Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to discuss our research with you.
Your study concerns the role of ubiquitination in the antiviral response. And there are really two different types of antiviral responses. In immune cells, the antiviral response mediates adaptive immunity, which is a specific response to a virus that leads to long-lasting immunity against that virus. But in non-immune cells, the antiviral response doesn't contribute to immunity. What does the antiviral response in non-immune cells look like?
Actually, long before an antiviral response is activated in immune cells, a so-called innate immune response in non-immune cells, such as epithelial cells or fibroblast cells, for example, in our lung or liver, is activated. And this is really to suppress viral replication immediately upon infection. And this very early immune response is activated actually minutes or hours after our body is infected with viral pathogens such as influenza virus or hepatitis C virus or also dengue virus. And a central process in this innate immune response is the production of antiviral cytokines. One important group, for example, are these type 1 interferons, which comprise several interferon alpha subtypes or also interferon beta. And these interferons are produced in infected epithelia or fibroblast cells and are then secreted outside the cell to alarm non-infected neighboring cells of the viral attack. And in these neighboring cells, interferon activates signaling cascades that result in the upregulation of more than 100 different genes, which encode for so-called antiviral effector molecules that block distinct steps in the viral life cycle and thereby block the virus replication. And in addition, pro-inflammatory molecules are produced and secreted by these infected non-immune cells, which then induce an inflammatory response that is important to, in the end, attract immune cells to detect and eliminate virus-infected cells.
How is the innate immune response triggered when a virus enters a cell?
So one critical sensor in all of our cells is the sensor called RIG-I that detects many RNA viruses, for example, influenza virus, measles virus, or also hepatitis C virus. And how that works, upon viral infection, RIG-I binds and recognizes specifically viral RNA, but not our own cellular RNAs. And upon viral RNA binding, then RIG-I activates several signal transduction pathways, and they then result in the production of these already mentioned type 1 interferons, which then block virus replication. And a little bit more detail, upon viral RNA binding, RIG-I interacts with one critical adapter molecule called MAF, which interestingly localizes at the outer membrane of mitochondria. And from there, basically, multiple kinases and other signaling molecules are activated, in the end also several transcription factors, which then and translocate into the nucleus to induce interference in other antiviral genes to start or to activate this innate immune response.
How does ubiquitination control that antiviral signaling from RIG-I?
So in recent years, it has become evident that the ubiquitination system tightly regulates the RIG-I-mediated innate immune response. And indeed, the activity of many immune signaling molecules in this pathway, not only of RIG-I, has been shown to be tightly regulated by ubiquitination or deubiquitination. Our previous work actually showed that RIG-I is ubiquitinated or modified by a unique type of ubiquitination, a so-called lysine-63-linked polyubiquitination. And this ubiquitination does not lead to proteasomal degradation of RIG-I, but instead actually activates RIG-I to induce an antiviral response and type 1 interference. We showed that this quite unique type of ubiquitination of RIG-I activates RIG-I by facilitating the interaction of RIG-I with its downstream adapter molecule MAF. And our previous studies also identified the enzyme responsible for RIG-I ubiquitination and ubiquitin E3 ligase called TRIM25, which specifically binds to RIG-I only in virus-infected cells and then stimulates this lysine-63-linked ubiquitination on RIG-I. And interestingly, TRIM25, this ubiquitin E3 ligase itself, is regulated by ubiquitination. However, in this case, it's a so-called classical, we call it lysine-48-linked polyubiquitination, which leads to degradation of TRIM25. In our studies, in collaboration with Jay Zhang's lab at the University of Southern California, showed that the ubiquitin E3 ligase complex LUBAC induces this ubiquitination on TRIM25 late during viral infection and thereby, in the end, induces the degradation of TRIM25. And we believe that this mechanism is important for down-regulating the interferon response after successful clearance of the viral infection. Dampening the interferon response after a successful clearance of the virus is very important because a prolonged or excessive interferon production could potentially lead to inflammation and autoimmune diseases. So while lysine-63-linked ubiquitination of RIG-I is important for the rapid activation of the antiviral response, the lysine-48-linked ubiquitination of TRIM25 is required to downregulate the antiviral response after the virus has been successfully eliminated in the non-immune cells.
In this study, you identified yet another player in this complicated ubiquitination system. What is that enzyme and what does it do? How does it affect antiviral signaling downstream of RIG-I?
So the new enzyme that we identified is the deubiquitinating enzyme USP15. Our study showed that USP15 deubiquitinates TRIM25, so it removes the ubiquitination from TRIM25 during the course of viral infection and thereby stabilizes TRIM25, which ultimately leads to a sustained antiviral response mediated by the sensor RIG-I. We used in our study mass spectrometry analysis to identify actually novel interaction partners of TRIM25 and found USP15. USP15 had been shown to play an important role in many different signal transduction pathways, for example, in the NF-κB pathway or Wnt signaling. However, prior to our study, there has been no role described for USP15 in the antiviral immune response. But now our results show that USP15 specifically binds to TRIM25 in infected but not uninfected cells, and this happens relatively late during viral infection. We also know now that USP15 then removes the ubiquitination of TRIM25, which leads to TRIM25 stabilization and ultimately to an boosted or higher RIG-I-mediated antiviral response. Our studies also showed that USP15 indeed acts antiviral to several RNA viruses that are sensed by RIG-I, for example, paramyxoviruses or vesicular stomatitis virus, which belongs to the raptoviruses. And mechanistically, USP15 potentiates the RIG-I immune response by stabilizing TRIM25. And this mechanism, we believe, is important for a maximum antiviral response and for an efficient elimination of the virus in non-immune cells.
So USP15 essentially competes with LUBAC to control the activity of TRIM25.
Yes.
The system of ubiquitination sounds very complicated. Is the ubiquitin system in the RIG-I pathway something that could be targeted therapeutically to help virus-infected patients keep viral replication under control or to prevent spreading of the virus?
Yes, indeed. So in recent years, actually, much progress has been made in understanding the molecular basis of ubiquitin action in the innate immune response. And we know by now that not only the activities of RIG-I and TRIM25 are tightly controlled by ubiquitination and deubiquitination, but actually the function of many other molecules in the immune system. So targeting the ubiquitin system is indeed a potential therapeutic strategy, which could be used to either boost our immune system and thus improve disease outcome. On the other hand, of course, targeting specific components in the ubiquitin system may reduce the cytokine production, specifically the pro-inflammatory cytokines. And this could be useful for dampening an overactive immune system, which occurs, for example, in autoimmune diseases. And among the different components of the ubiquitin machinery, of course, the ubiquitin E3 ligases are considered to be the most important components, and they indeed could be targeted by small molecule inhibitors. So, for example, it is conceivable that targeting TRIM25 by small molecule inhibitors could be used to downregulate the antiviral or inflammatory response. And on the other hand, targeting the E3 ligase complex LUBAC by inhibitors, small molecule inhibitors, would lead to an enhanced TRIM25 protein stability, which then would result in a boosted antiviral response.
Thank you, Michaela, for taking the time to speak with me.
You're very welcome.
That was Michaela Gack discussing a paper published in the January 7th issue of Science Signaling by Pauly and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any questions or comments, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.